All right, y'all, welcome to the show. I got an amazing one for you today. So right off the bat here, even CNN has to cover the most recent Israeli war crimes. There was a new mass grave found, and the number just keeps going up in terms of how many Palestinian bodies have been discovered. So really, really gruesome and terrible stuff. We'll talk about that. We'll get to the stunning admission from the Israeli government about how long the war can last. We'll get to the pro-Palestine college kids who are protesting. They are getting viciously smeared in the media, and there is a huge and dishonest overreaction to their protests. This has really been getting under my skin. You know, I covered the protest the other day as part of a bigger Israel segment, thinking this is just, you know, a smaller part of the bigger story of Israel. But in the United States, this is getting more coverage than the literal mass graves that were found. It's getting more coverage than the five or six war crimes of the day that the IDF committed. There's a colossal overreaction to college kids standing up and protesting and doing the right thing and trying to get their universities to divest from Israel and trying to stop Israel committing a genocide and an ethnic cleansing. So we'll talk about all that. Then I'll get to some huge news coming out about Trump. A top media ally of Trump flipped and told all in court testimony. And man, is it juicy and is it dirty. And then later on, we have huge, huge wins for workers that just dropped one after the other after the other. You're not going to want to miss that. And then later on, Crystal triggered an IDF freak on Piers Morgan. And it is time, y'all. It is time for an official wife guy segment. We haven't had one in a solid maybe 2 or 3 months. So it's time to dive in. So we got all that and more. Everybody do me a big favor. Please subscribe to the channel. It helps out massively. It costs you nothing. We're trying to get to 10 million so we can get that sexy ass 10 million plaque. All right, without further ado, let's jump into it here. So we discussed the other day that there was a new mass grave that was found in Gaza. One of the points I made at the time is like, how many of these things are there? How many are there? Because we're discovering one, what, every couple of weeks? That leads me to believe that the official count of the dead from the UN and other organizations, it's probably a massive undercount. Even the Euromed Monitor numbers, that human rights group, they have the highest number in terms of the dead in Gaza. Even that, I think, is an undercount because they don't have the infrastructure to really keep up with the number of dead people. And also, nobody had the people that were in this mass grave counted as part of their tallies, and now, boom, they stumbled across another mass grave. So Christiane Amanpour, there was a story about her maybe a month or so ago where she apparently snapped behind the scenes and said, like, CNN is dishonestly covering Israel and Palestine. She was furious because you guys know there was reporting that IDF censors have a say in what can run and what doesn't run. And there were pressures from the top about, hey, don't be too critical of Israel. I'm sure she saw the report about the difference in language describing Israeli victims versus Palestinian victims. It's very passive language when it's Palestinian victims. It's very emotive and strong language when talking about Israeli victims. So she had enough. And since then, she's honestly been doing a pretty decent job leaning into explaining what's actually happening on the ground. So here's this brutal and devastating report about a new mass grave found in Gaza. Warning in advance, of course, this is some disturbing stuff.
The State Department has raised concerns about the conflict in Gaza in its annual report on human rights. Antony Blinken called it, quote, deeply troubling and noted allegations of war crimes by both Israel and Hamas. This comes as a mass grave containing over 300 bodies has been uncovered at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis.
Last time we talked to you, it was just over 100 bodies that were found in this mass grave. Now it's over 300. That number just keeps growing.
Correspondent Nada Bashir reports on the intense grief amongst the survivors. And of course, this story is difficult to watch.
For the last 10 days, this mother has returned to Gaza's Nasser Hospital, searching desperately for the body of her 24-year-old daughter, Kolthar. She had been buried at this makeshift gravesite in January. Now, her body is missing. The Israelis turned the hospital upside down, she says. They dug up all the dead bodies and moved them around. These are the shrouded corpses of those retrieved from a newly discovered mass grave in Khan Yunis. More than 300 bodies have been recovered so far, according to Gaza's civil defense. But the search is still ongoing. This is a crime against humanity, Dr. Al-Maghaya says. How could the Israeli occupation forces dig up these graves and mishandle the bodies of our martyrs? In some cases, they even opened and removed the bodies from their bags, even though their names had been marked on them. Many of the bodies recovered here were buried by relatives or medics on the hospital's grounds in January as a temporary measure. Israel's relentless bombardment of the southern city, making it too difficult to carry out a traditional burial. Following the IDF's withdrawal from Khan Yunis, families returned in the hope of finally laying their loved ones to rest, only to find that their bodies had been exhumed by the Israeli military, according to civil defense officials, and discarded in this nearby mass grave. I still haven't found my son Khalil's body, this father says. We had buried him over there, but we can't find him anymore. We just want to give him a dignified burial. According to Gaza's civil defense chief, some bodies have been discovered with their hands tied together. An indication, he says, that these may be the victims of alleged field executions.
I don't know if they go on to point this out, but there's even evidence of field executions of doctors and nurses and medical professionals in particular. I mean, this is something we've covered when you look at the Euromed monitor numbers, that there's hundreds and hundreds of medical professionals who've been targeted. There's evidence in this instance, some of these people were medical professionals. Some of them were stripped naked before they were handcuffed and tortured and killed. As they correctly are describing here, the IDF has desecrated the bodies. I mean, we've known a lot of this has been going on for a while, but it still is a shock to the system when you hear about it, right? We should all... Honestly, this is dark to say, but we should be thankful this is at least getting coverage in CNN for the longest time. They don't talk about stuff like this.
Though CNN is unable to verify such claims and cannot confirm the causes of death among the bodies being unearthed.
See, that's the IDF input there. Say you don't know exactly what happened. Yeah, what happened? Did all these people die of cancer? Did they have rabies? Is that what, or, you know, is it that the IDF has been dropping bombs on top of their head for a really long time now and massacring everybody in sight? I wonder what happened.
But this would not be the first time graves have been disturbed by the Israeli military. The IDF previously acknowledging that its forces have exhumed graves in Gaza in order to carry out DNA tests to identify potential hostages. This man points to the palm tree beside which his brother, Ala, had been buried. 2 weeks on and his body has still not been found. Under international humanitarian law, graves must, in times of war, be respected, properly maintained, and marked so they may always be found. But in Gaza, the Palestinian people have been robbed of their dignity.
Yeah. I wonder if, I'm sure that the international community is going to get right on top of that and add this to the list of the 4,000 Israeli war crimes, right? I'm sure they're taking copious notes at the moment.
Even in death.
Nada Bashir reporting then. The IDF says the claim that Israeli troops buried scores of Palestinian bodies in a mass grave is, quote, baseless and unfounded.
I know, dude. I know. Yeah, and everybody you killed is Hamas, and you're only defending yourselves, and blah, 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 blah. How many times have we heard all this stuff? It's beyond ridiculous.
Saying bodies buried at Nasser Hospital were examined and returned to their place. Of course, in addition, the horrific and soaring death toll inflicted on Palestinians in Gaza, we remember that an estimated 133 Israeli hostages remain in Hamas captivity there.
And I believe the number is over 3,000 Palestinian hostages being held by Israel, but they're not referred to as hostages. They're called prisoners, even though they're not prisoners. There haven't been charges. They are hostages. See, that last part right there is like CNN probably pressuring Amman. But yeah, you got to say these things. We don't even know about how these mass graves came about. We are shocked. Okay, look at this, guys. So in the New York Times, Ken Klippenstein highlighted it here for us. Some Israeli officials say grinding down Hamas may take years. Benny Gantz, a member of Israel's war cabinet, told a group of Israelis in January that the war could last a year, a decade, or a generation, according to a person who participated in the meeting. What did we tell you from early on? I told you that this impossible standard that they set, we need to completely destroy and root out Hamas. Hamas needs to surrender in order for us to stop this. The reason why they said that is they wanted to give themselves an excuse for an endless war. That's what they wanted. Because obviously the idea, the notion of totally defeating and destroying Hamas, that's not possible. How are you going to do that when you're creating triple or quadruple the number of Palestinian militant hardliners on a daily basis? How many orphans are now going to join a militant hardline Palestinian group after you killed their family? That number is going to go up and up and up and up. And if it's not under the banner of Hamas, it'll be under the banner of Hamas 2.0, or it'll be under the banner of a whole brand new group that has the same goals in mind of revenge and retribution. They know this. They understand this. They say, we got to totally destroy Hamas, and Hamas needs to surrender. The reason they're saying that is so that they have an excuse to never end this. And now this was an admission. By the way, you're going to love this fact. Who's Benny Gantz? Benny Gantz is the guy who's viewed as the potential moderate to replace Netanyahu in elections. So Netanyahu himself is like, yeah, endless war. Let's keep doing a genocide. Let's keep doing an ethnic cleansing. And his so-called moderate opponent is like, yeah, maybe this will take a year. Maybe it'll take a decade. Maybe it'll take a generation. So how many Palestinians are you going to kill in that time? How many innocent women and children are you going to kill in that time? We're already at over 40,000 with how long you've done this, and you want this to go on for a decade or more? Jesus Christ, man. And we're arming and funding this. The U.S. is arming and funding this. All right, now, point this out to you. This is from the Chief of Communications of Euromed Monitor, the Human Rights Group. Scam. It's been 48 days since Biden promised a Gaza floating pier within 2 months. Now the Pentagon admits there's been zero physical construction of the pier or the causeway. We are positioned to begin construction very soon. Joe was buying time for a genocidal famine. This is exactly, you go back and watch. I remember we had a talk about this. I think it was the night of the State of the Union on our live coverage over on the Breaking Points channel. And that's the point that I made. That's the point that Crystal made. Like, I don't even know if this thing is going to get built. They're just trying to buy time for Netanyahu to do whatever the fuck he wants to do and put up this thin veneer of, oh, we are the serious humanitarians. We're trying to find ways to make sure that Palestinians don't starve and die. Meanwhile, at the same time, we cut off funding to UNRWA, the number one group on the ground who's providing food and assistance to Palestinians. How are we going to cut off funding to UNRWA and then turn around and say, but we care so deeply about these Palestinian civilians, we're going to build a fucking random-ass pier that's going to take a long time to build, if it's built at all? Jesus, man. Every level of this has been a total scam. But look, people are seeing through it. This is why the poll numbers are so devastating. Over 50% of Biden voters from 2020 say, yeah, I think Israel's committing a genocide. And more than that say, they might be committing a genocide. Overwhelming majority want a ceasefire. What are we doing here, man? What are we doing? But by the way, you'll see. Credit to CNN for doing that segment on the mass graves. You'll see the story of protesting college kids is getting roughly 10 to 15 times the coverage of the stories of mass graves in Gaza. You're not supposed to care about the mass graves because you have to care about the feelings of college kids who think they're unsafe, even though they're not. Don't get me started on this. Don't get me started on this. But you know what? Get me started on it. I'm gonna do the other segment right now. All right. So look, the other day we talked about these Columbia protests. You have pro-Palestine students who are out there and making their voices heard. They're trying to get Columbia to divest from Israel. They're also, of course, standing up and protesting the ongoing genocide and ethnic cleansing in Gaza. Now, the other day when we talked about this, you know, I just put it as part of a bigger Israel segment, because in my mind, that's where it belongs. We could talk about the protesting of the genocide in the broader context of the genocide and talk about all the updates, everything the IDF is doing, all the new atrocities that are coming out. That's where I put it. But what I couldn't foresee is just how deranged our media is, where protesting college kids have become a bigger story, a bigger scandal, a bigger outrage than new mass graves found in Gaza. But that's where we are. The media is absolutely melting down over a bunch of college kids camping on a lawn and saying, hey, divest from Israel and stop the genocide. Okay, so Breaking Points put together this little compilation here of the media's coverage of this. And woo, just get ready. Just get ready. There's so much to say about all this. By the way, this guy right here, I think, is Robert Kraft. He's a billionaire or multimillionaire. I don't remember. And he came out and said, I'm not giving any more money to Colombia. I don't recognize them now because they're not cracking down hard enough on these protesters. By the way, they sent in the NYPD to crack down on the peaceful protesters. What more did you want? First of all, they shouldn't have sent the NYPD. This is called the First Amendment. This is called free speech. This is called freedom to protest. But they sent in the NYPD. What did you want them to do? Start shooting bazookas at the students? What did you want? Suspend all the students. Let's stop playing this game. Then just come out and acknowledge I'm against free speech. I'm against free protest because I disagree on the substance of what these kids are saying. Just come out and say that. Don't tap dance around it. Don't drape it in fake virtue. And by the way, having like a billionaire threaten funding of the colleges, that almost exposes the problem perfectly. So now they got to kowtow to these billionaire donors because your feelings are hurt because you're a snowflake. So now you want to do cancel culture of people who are just speaking their mind in what's supposed to be a democracy? Fuck off. All right, let's get started. I know I'm talking too much already. Let's dive into this.
Both professors and students within the university who say things that I think cross the line, and there should be accountability.
By the way, look at the banner on CNN. Robert Kraft condemns anti-Semitism at Columbia University. Please, examples. I am waiting to hear. What are your examples of anti-Semitism? I got all day, homie. Here, you guys see if you hear any evidence.
Even free speech, say whatever you want, but pay the consequences and don't have your face covered.
Free speech, say whatever you want, but anytime that word comes after, I believe in free speech. But, oh, so now this part of the sentence is going to override that last part of the sentence. The part where you said you believed in free speech, the next part is going to be like, and that's why I don't believe in free speech. Fuck off.
I don't think that should be allowed.
These are not protesters. These are violent hate mongers. The things that are coming out of their mouth, burn down Tel Aviv, Tel Aviv genocide. October 7th, we did.
That guy, Barak Ravid, who works for Axios, tweeted a video where they say, oh, look, these are the protesters. And in the video, they chant something and it ends with burn Tel Aviv. But then he deleted the tweet. Then he deleted the tweet. And so I'm sitting there thinking, did a group of hundreds of college kids really chant burn down Tel Aviv? Or is this some fucking massive misinformation and people are lying on purpose? And so then he realized he had to delete the tweet when he found out it wasn't true. Right. Okay, let's be honest here. The real issue is when these kids say, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. They have a problem with that. And they also have a problem with Intifada. And their interpretation when the kids say that is, you're calling for genocide of all Jews. That's what they say. That's what they believe. Doesn't matter how many times you point out, hey, why don't you go talk to the people who are saying this and ask them what they really believe by from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Usually they say, well, you ask them, I know, I've done it. Usually they say, I mean a one-state democratic secular state in the region that protects everybody's rights, Israelis and Palestinians alike. One-state democratic solution. That's what they mean when they say, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Not, let's genocide Jews. Obviously they don't mean that. For you to think for even a second, they might mean that. That's absurd. You got some fucking 21-year-old kid who lives in Burbank, who goes to this expensive college with pink hair. They're in agreement with, like, the fucking Hamas spokesperson. That's what you think? It's like you're not even trying to understand where people are coming from. And by the way, we're deep into a genocide now. Of course fucking people are going to be pissed the fuck off about that, because it's our money and our weapons going and supporting it. And by the way, even on the Intifada point, they think it's such Intifada. Intifada is by definition violent. Let's break this down a little bit. Have there been Intifadas that have been violent and violent against civilians? Yes, there has. But to say Intifada, that word just means uprising. You can mean uprising as in, hey, 2018, Great March of Return, totally peaceful, totally nonviolent, Palestinians trying to get their rights. You can mean it that way. You can mean it in the context of Palestinians have a right to defend themselves against an ongoing ethnic cleansing and a genocide. They have a right to self-defense. And when you say Intifada, of course you can mean I want an uprising against legitimate military targets. And if people have a problem with that, then flip it on them and say, well, hold on now. Do Palestinians not have a right to defend themselves? Make them answer that. Because everybody loves to crow from the rooftop, Israel's right to defend themselves, Israel's right to defend themselves. Do Palestinians have a right to defend themselves against the wanton aggression that the IDF is doing, killing 92% civilians, including 15,000 children and 9,000 women? It's all fake outrage. Fake. This is so fucking fake, I can't stand it. They know that a group of 300 college kids are not out there like, Viva la Hamas! They know that's the game. But they smear him as that anyway.
We'll do it 10 times, we'll do it 100 times, we'll do it 1,000 times, we'll do it 10,000 times. This is an atrocity, and I'm going to say the quartet out loud. If there was any group spewing hate and violence against any other group, Asians, Blacks, Hispanics, gays, it would be shut down. And this needs to be shut down immediately because, and once again, those groups are back, those tents are back up. And this cannot go unanswered. It's very simple. And, you know, there's a continuum of protesters. There's a heinous anti-violent ones that spewing hatred, spewing death, if you will. And then there's the less malignant that say ceasefire. But even ceasefire doesn't have the word peace in it. Never.
This motherfucker has a job commenting on politics. He is outraged and aggrieved that students are saying, ceasefire now! These people have lost their fucking minds. They've lost their fucking minds. Look, you guys know me. I am one to always assume good intent among those who disagree with me. I will take what they say at face value and respond to that. But as I pointed out on this particular issue previously, I'm having a hard time not coming to the inevitable conclusion that all of these idiots crowing in the media are just dishonest liars. Because you know why these students are out there. You know they want to divest from Israel, which makes perfect sense. It would be like divesting from South Africa during the heart of apartheid. That makes perfect sense. That's perfectly reasonable. And they want to stop the U.S. arming and funding a fucking genocide where 41,000 Palestinians have been killed. And now 2 million out of 2.3 million Gazans are homeless. And they're pretending this is a hate rally. No, you have the hateful position because you are implying what's going on with Israel and the IDF is totally fine. They're just defending themselves. They're just defending themselves. You have to sit down and accept that our money and our weapons are funding a genocide. You tell me who's hateful in that scenario.
You hear the word peace because this side doesn't want peace. It wants a jihad. And this is not pro-Palestinian, this is anti-Israel. And anti-Israel is a misnomer because it's really anti-Jew.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That's anti-Semitic. Some of the leaders in these groups protesting Israel and standing up for Palestinian rights, some of the leaders are Jewish. And you are erasing them.
Even go further. It's not almost anti-Semitism. It is anti-Semitism.
I'm going to jump out of the fucking window, man. I'm going to jump out of the window. I'm going to shove my dick in a meat grinder. How long are we into the fucking genocide? How deep are we into this genocide? 41,000 dead Palestinians, 15,000 of them dead kids. And these motherfuckers are bitching and moaning and crying and morally outraged over a bunch of college kids protesting, saying stop the genocide and divest from Israel. You guys are fucking liars and fucking dishonest. Either that or your moral meter is totally broken. Just completely and utterly shattered in a thousand different ways. By the way, the very, very few instances of violence that they point to, turns out one of them was just totally debunked. They point to one thing that like didn't even happen on a college campus. It wasn't on the college campus. Some Israel supporter got punched. But again, wasn't on the college campus. Had nothing to do with these particular protesters, right? And the other one is something that was just debunked by video. This girl came out and said, I got poked in the eye with a Palestinian flag on purpose. Really? Weird. Her eye looks perfectly fine. And on the video, there's no way in hell it was a purposeful poking in the eye. The flag barely grazed her. And she made a mountain out of a molehill to try to garner sympathy and smear the protesters as violent. I'm losing it, y'all. I'm losing it. I'm having a hard time fucking containing myself watching this. This is the most dishonest shit I think I've ever seen.
This is something that is on display right now, but the sort of roots of this kind of devolving from A to B go back millennia. And this is something, the roots of anti-Semitism that pop up in societies that frankly tend to be a canary in the coal mine for a society and a democracy in this case that is in a lot of trouble. It is, I like to look at this and replace Jews with any other minority group here. And what would the entire country be doing? They would be outraged, rightly so.
So obviously, as
again, total erasure of the fact that you have a lot of Jews leading these peace movements, leading these protests. By the way, Colombia was one of the first to ban Jewish Voice for Peace. They banned them. They banned them early on. In like mid-October or something. They banned them. Did she come out and say that's anti-Semitic of Colombia to ban Jewish Voice for Peace? These are Jews and you're trying to muzzle them. You're trying to silence them. You're trying to take away their voice. You're trying to take away their free speech. No, she didn't do that. She's just lying about the protesters and why they're doing what they're doing. Again, they're not even trying, guys. They're not even trying. Hey, what's the purpose of what they're doing? Not even trying. They're just lying. They're just liars.
Protest is an important part of being an American. Free speech is an important part of being an American. Where is the line? For example, I've seen video of somebody at the Gaza encampment at Columbia standing up and talking about how great October 7th Hamas attacks on Israel was and calling the Hamas terrorists, calling them freedom fighters. Is that hate speech or is that protected free speech? Where do you come down on that?
And that is, believe it or not, as vile as it could be, because Hamas should be destroyed from the actions they did on October 7th and other actions. But that does not fall into a crime. If someone makes a comment that they want to join a terrorist organization, that's going to come under investigation. But the commissioner of legal matters at the New York City Police Department is going to really break this down for New Yorkers.
He has to remind Jake Tapper that the First Amendment is a thing. He has to remind him. And by the way, they're like, hey, but look, we'll investigate, though. You'll investigate what? You'll investigate what? By the way, what Jake Tapper referred to there, I looked for all this stuff. I didn't see a video on that. If you saw it, send it to me. If somebody's actually out there like, hooray, October 7th, of course, that should be condemned. No doubt about it. But what I've seen is people, again, trying to make a mountain out of a molehill. One of the things that they were so pissed off about, and that guy Shay Davide is losing his mind over, is there was a group of Zionists waving a bunch of Israeli flags. And you had one person wearing a keffiyeh and holding up a sign pointing at them saying, Al-Qassam's next target. That's the military wing of Hamas. That's the thing that I saw that everybody was making the biggest deal out of. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think that this person actually has a direct line to Hamas and that, like, these people are going to get targeted? Do you think that's what's going on there? Or do you think this is somebody making a very edgy joke saying, yeah, look at these assholes. This is Hamas's next target. What do you think it is? And again, we can play this game all day long, right? Oh my God, I found 3 instances of things that were slightly wrong at these protests. I guess they're all anti-Semitic. I guess this is all hate speech, and I guess we should shut it all down. Right? We could play this game with fucking any protest. Any protest about any issue. That's what we can do. But that would be dishonest. That would be dishonest. None of these people actually believe that the hundreds or thousands of students out there protesting, that they're all like, rah-rah Hamas, rah-rah Hezbollah, glory to our fighters in Al-Qassam. They know that that's not their stance. They know that the reason they're doing this is university divest from Israel and stop the genocide. They know. But they're not going to engage on that because they lose that argument 10 out of 10 times. So you just smear the whole protest movement and forget that free speech is a thing and exists. And even if people are saying things that are wrong, it's acceptable. That's why we had the Supreme Court case from Skokie, Illinois, about how even Nazis saying Nazi shit were legally allowed to protest through a majority Jewish town. Now, those people were actually scumbags, but they're legally allowed to do it. But instead, now we all forget that. We all forget how the United States works, how the First Amendment works, and we define the entire movement by the fringe of bad people or the few bad instances you could point to. Okay, I got to give you more on this. Senator Tom Cotton and Josh Hawley are demanding President Joe Biden unleash the full force of the state's National Guard to suppress pro-Palestinian student protests at Columbia University. So again, the same assholes that pretended they're all about free speech, they're all about free protests in the First Amendment, they flip on a fucking dime the second they disagree with the speech. That's what this is. They can't even make an argument that 1% of these protesters are violent, but they're saying send in the National Guard and crack skulls and ban them from exercising their First Amendment rights. These guys are authoritarian scumbags and are more than happy to censor when the issue is Israel. Okay, this sounds like a joke. This sounds like a joke. This is in the Wall Street Journal. Who's behind the anti-Israel protests? Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, and others are grooming activists in the U.S. and across the West. They cannot fathom that maybe these students have seen dozens of videos of babies being pulled out from underneath rubble of buildings that were bombed, and they have a moral issue with that. They can't fathom that young people look at the death toll of 15,000 kids, 9,000 women, 36,000 civilians. They look at that and they go, man, my money and our weapons are going to the country doing this. That should stop. They can't fathom that young people would react like that. So what do they do? I don't know. These activists are a front group for Hamas and Hezbollah and the Houthis. Yeah. Yeah. The big Houthi lobby is paying these protesters. The big Hezbollah lobby is paying these protesters. What fucking planet do you live on? And by the way, the same people making these accusations against the protesters, they're all funded by AIPAC. They're all funded by the Israel lobby. You really want to have a conversation about, big money funding protest movements and astroturfing and funding politicians? You do not want to have that conversation. I guarantee you 10 out of 10 times you're going to lose that. Because obviously the big money comes from Israel and Saudi Arabia and multinational corporations and billionaires. These are just kids with a conscience. God fucking damn it. Yeah, it's Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis are behind the anti-Israel protests. It can't just be that people are fucking disgusted by witnessing Israel carpet bomb children on a daily basis and do a total medieval siege on Gaza where they starve millions of people. All right, so this guy, Shay Davide, is completely fucking unhinged. A total little petty authoritarian censorious freak. He's been raging against the protesters. He works at Columbia, and he's feeding into this notion of, like, the Jewish students there are unsafe. The only Jewish students that are unsafe are leading the pro-Palestine movement. And they're not safe because of assholes like you who are trying to get them suspended and trying to have the NYPD crack their fucking skulls. You absolute charlatan fraud. So here he is giving a speech, This speaks for itself. Oh, damn it. I only have the 3-minute video of this, the 3-second video of this. There's a longer one. It's completely unhinged. But this part is really sums up how dishonest this whole conversation is.
Right now, we are not okay.
We are not okay. And he's doing this thing about how, you know, Jewish students aren't safe. Now, remember, when he says that, what he means is people who are pro-Israel, Zionists, are not safe. Well, it looks to me like the NYPD is cracking the skulls of the pro-Palestine people and arresting the pro-Palestine people. They're not arresting the Zionists. So you're lying. They're trying to make it seem like this is some sort of a lynch mob about to do a pogrom if you let them protest. Again, totally, totally dishonest. All right. NYPD is now mass arresting NYU student protesters and faculty. By the way, in a couple of instances, the faculty at these various colleges and universities, because now the protests have spread, the faculties have come out to defend their students. And in some instances, the cops are arresting now the protesters and the faculty. After more than 100 students from Barnard College and Columbia University were arrested at an encampment calling for the school to divest from Israel amid the country's deadly assault on Gaza, similar encampments have begun across the United States. So there's a snowball effect. There's a little bit of a backlash here because with Columbia cracking down, a bunch of people stood in solidarity, and the next day there were even more people there. Why? Because you can't hide the truth. You can't hide the real reason why these people are doing this, and you guys are coming across as smear merchants, because you are. Justin, Columbia University has announced classes will be remote the rest of the year as anti-Israel protests rock the school. There are now growing calls for tuition refunds for the $70,000 a year college now that it has practically turned into an online school. Quote, it's vital that teaching and learning continue during this time. We recognize conditions vary across our campuses and thus are issuing the following guidelines, the school said while making the announcement. Okay. Could you imagine? Instead of letting the students speak their mind, have a conscience, protest. By the way, the students are, of course, correct. Is that shut it all down. Shut it all down. We're going to do online classes. How would you feel if you were going to Columbia in this instance and the school did this? How would you feel if you're the parent and your kid's going there and now they got to do the rest of the classes online? This is free speech. This is free protest. They're allowed to do this. They should be allowed to do this. They're on the right side of history. And there's a colossal, colossal overreaction. New York University barricaded Cadman Plaza, where pro-Palestinian demonstrators had gathered the previous day before being dispersed and arrested, to deter them from reconvening for future protests. Again, tell me who's unsafe. Tell me who's, getting cracked down on. Please. I'd love to hear this. And finally, we got this. New 28 unions representing tens of thousands of workers are demanding the immediate reinstatement of all student and student workers disciplined for pro-Palestine protests and the end to the repression of protest on Columbia's campus. Shout out to those unions, man, standing with the students who are doing the right thing. Guys, yet again, I want to reiterate this. This segment has gone way too long, but I have to say this. I've never seen such fake, dishonest outrage, and I've never seen so many grotesque lies about students who are protesting because they want to divest from Israel, which is a country doing an ethnic cleansing and a genocide. They want to divest from Israel. That's what they want to do. And they want to stop the genocide. And they're getting smeared. They're called Hamas-funded, Hezbollah-funded, Houthi-funded. They're called anti-Semites. They're called every name in the book, all because they have a conscience. This is exactly like the anti-Vietnam War protests. This is exactly like the anti-Iraq War protests. Everybody who was right in the moment was portrayed as the enemy. History repeats itself, but we're on to it. They're not going to get this one by us. Everybody can see right through it. All right, guys, we got some big news here on the Trump front. So, of course, he's been in court for the past few days. He's going to have to continue to go to court since this is a criminal trial. And we have our first witness that was called against Trump. And this is fascinating. This guy was a top Trump ally. And he flipped, and he's telling all. So the guy's name is David Pecker. I know, hilarious name. He's the head of the National Enquirer. And man, he gives us all the tea. So the headline here from the Midas Touch Network is Pecker screws Trump. Pecker was called as the first witness against Trump. So let me walk you through. Let me give you the broad strokes before we get into the specifics here, but this is basically how it worked. David Pecker and Donald Trump had a financial agreement, and Michael Cohen at the time was Trump's right-hand man, his fixer. Michael Cohen did most of the dealing with David Pecker. Again, David Pecker is the head of the National Enquirer. For those of you who don't know, that's like a smutty tabloid-type magazine, and they run like salacious stories. So what they did is they agreed to a couple of things. They agreed to do what would basically refer to as a catch and kill. So in other words, if anybody came to the National Enquirer with dirt on Donald Trump, right, real or fake, in some instances, by the way, they did get fake dirt, but they also got real dirt from time to time, too. In those instances, the National Enquirer would get the dirt. They would call up Michael Cohen and they would say, hey, we have this negative story about Trump running. Number one, is it true or not? Right. But number two, if you pay us, we will kill this story and not run it. So there were instances of like Michael Cohen sending 30,000 or 60,000 or whatever to kill a negative story about Trump. So somebody went to the National Enquirer with news against Trump that they thought they would run. The National Enquirer would get the story, get money from the Trump campaign or the Trump team, and then axe the story and make sure it never ran. So that was one of their agreements. The other agreement was, you're going to viciously smear all of my opponents. And they did it in the Republican primary, and they also did it in the general against Hillary. So this guy now, again, he came out and he's telling all. So he says here, the practice of his company was, quote, checkbook journalism, where they pay people who brought them exclusive stories. When asked to give the last four digits of his phone number, Pecker gave his full phone number, which means he might get a bunch of calls. But just so you know, checkbook journalism is not a thing. That's not a thing. Like, you know, we're going to pay people to give us exclusive stories. Okay. Pecker said that his editor-in-chief at the Enquirer was Dylan Howard. Howard's job was to vet potential stories and then bring them to Pecker. Pecker was asked who his main sources were who brought them stories. He said limousine drivers, people who work for lawyers, and other professions that have access to famous people. Pecker resumed his testimony on Tuesday morning after Trump's gag order hearing. He said that he has known Trump since the 1980s and they had a great relationship. He said that when Trump was doing The Apprentice, he would let him know ahead of time who was about to be fired so he could run the first story. So this is them describing that these guys had a long time relationship. They were friends. They were buddies. And then that's what led to, when he ran for president, them getting into this business relationship. He said they typically spoke about once a month, him and Trump, but that changed in 2015. And he spoke to him more often when Trump ran for president. Pecker said that he visited Trump at Trump Tower on multiple occasions and that he observed him at work reviewing invoices and signing checks. He said he was detail-oriented, almost a micromanager about his business affairs. Pecker said he first met Michael Cohen at a bar mitzvah. So the point to make here is anytime Trump tries to say, nope, that wasn't me, I'm just a figurehead, the people underneath me committed crime X, Y, or Z. No, this guy describes him as a micromanager, very directly involved in all of the business decisions. That's interesting. That's interesting. He said that Trump introduced him to Cohen in 2007 and told him in 2015 that if anything came across his desk that pertained to him, including any rumors about him, that he should call Michael Cohen and let him know about it. He said that is when things started to get busy on the Trump front, and he was contacted by Cohen almost daily during the 2016 campaign. Pecker said he was invited by Trump to his campaign announcement in June 2015, where he came down the golden escalator. In an email to Pecker, Michael Cohen wrote, "No one deserves to be there more than you." Pecker said he later attended a meeting in Trump Tower in August 2015 with Trump, Cohen, and Hope Hicks. Pecker said they asked him what his magazines could do to help the campaign. Pecker said he told them that he could be their eyes and ears and told them he could tip them off about anything he heard, including women selling stories. He said that the plan was for Cohen to purchase negative stories to kill them and prevent them from ever being published. Pecker was asked who was the first one who brought up the subject of women. He said that he was making a statement that was somewhat odd considering that Trump had been married to Melania for several years. So they go on to describe here, there were a number of stories that were brought to this guy, the head of the National Enquirer, and some of them actually turned out to be fake. One of them was like a love child of Trump's, but then some of them were real. You have the Stormy Daniels one, you have the Karen McDougal one. So these are both affairs that Trump had, and you know, he paid him off and whatnot. But like, this guy got a lot of the dirt first. So again, the move vis-a-vis Trump, catch and kill anything related to Trump. No negative news about Trump. And when it comes to Trump's opponents, it's viciously smear in the most vile way imaginable. So just to give you guys a reminder as to how bad it was. Okay, this is in the Inquirer. Hillary Clinton brain cancer drama, memory loss, and vision agony. Totally bogus. Untrue. Hillary, 6 months to live. As you all know now, this story ran in what, 2015, 2016? Totally bogus, totally untrue. Obama and Hillary order FBI to spy on Trump. Proof Obama wiretapped Trump. Ted Cruz's father linked to JFK assassination. They had some fake bullshit in there about Ben Carson leaving a sponge in somebody's head that he did brain surgery to. Totally fake. They had some Ted Cruz affair thing with like five different women. Totally fucking fake. Totally made up. So guys, what we're looking at here, and this is interesting because I don't know how directly this pertains to the exact crime he committed in the hush money case, right? But what they're doing here is they're building a narrative in the courtroom. And the narrative is ugly, corrupt, dishonest dealings, paying to kill stories, paying to get the negative stories run. Isn't it ironic that the dude who could not shut the fuck up, running everywhere and saying, fake news, fake news. Everything about me is fake news. If it's negative, fake news. If it's good, it's not fake news. But if it's negative, it's fake news. Fake news, fake news, fake news. This is all he did all the time. What was uncovered here in court testimony is a literal fake news operation. Hide even true stories about Trump, catch and kill, pay him off, he'll bury him, and also have them run fake stories on purpose about all of Trump's enemies. How rich that this is the guy who berates the media and calls them fake news when he had a literal fake news operation running. Total projection. Total projection. He's accusing others of exactly what he's engaging in and what David Pecker is engaging in. Now, look, I don't know why this guy flipped. I don't know what dirt they have on him that they could have brought up, could have charged him with, but I'm happy he did flip. And it looks to me like they're going to build a case here of like a lot of, looks like a lot of funds that were spent at the very least unethically, but in the case of Stormy Daniels, they would argue quite literally illegally because there's fraud associated with how they filed that payment that they made, right? So one day in court, it's not looking good for the big guy. This is just one day. There's a lot more time to go. So this story right here is a good reminder that what's going on with Trump in the courtroom is real as a heart attack. Logistical nightmare. New York Times reveals Secret Service is planning for Trump to be jailed. What? As former President Donald Trump faces a historic criminal trial in Manhattan, the U.S. Secret Service is grappling with the unprecedented scenario of potentially having to protect him in prison. The trial, which began last week, involves Trump being charged with 34 felony counts of falsifying business records to cover up a sex scandal and marked the first time a former U.S. president has faced criminal prosecution. The New York Times reported that behind the scenes, officials from the Secret Service and other law enforcement agencies had held preliminary discussions about the logistics of protecting Trump if he were to be incarcerated. These talks were sparked by prosecutors' request to consider the possibility of jailing Trump for contempt during the trial, even before a verdict is reached. So in other words, he's so unhinged. And he's been violating the gag order so much that it put the Secret Service in a position where they're like, now we have to plan for if homie's getting locked up. Because he's making it very likely he will get locked up. Damn, son. The Times noted that the Secret Service faces a logistical nightmare of safely incarcerating Trump. Obviously, it's uncharted territory, said Martin F. Horn, a former high-ranking official in New York State's prison system. Certainly no state prison system has had to deal with this before, and no federal prison has had to either. If Trump were to be in prison, the Secret Service would face the challenge of ensuring his safety 24/7. Measures would likely include keeping him separate from other inmates and constant monitoring. Agents would be armed. Despite the general prohibition of firearms in prison facilities, the discussions so far have focused on short-term scenarios, such as holding Trump in a courthouse cell if he were found in contempt of court. However, the more complex issue of long-term incarceration has yet to be fully addressed, given the likelihood of prolonged appeals if Trump is convicted. During a hearing Tuesday to determine whether Trump violated Justice Juan Merchan's gag order, prosecutors said they were not seeking incarceration as a sanction. Fines are on the table. There's a whole bunch of different avenues they could take if he keeps violating the gag order. But certainly at some point, if he can't stop and people are in direct danger, like he keeps calling out people who are involved in the case and making them get violent threats and things of that nature, at some point, even they're going to have enough, right? But the fact, guys, we are at the point where the Secret Service is trying to do the logistical breakdown to determine how they can safely put Trump behind bars. It all feels like it's not real until it is real, right? It all felt like it was not real until Comey got hit with a $454 million fine for business fraud, tax fraud, insurance fraud, bank fraud, and all that stuff. It was all fun and games until he got hit with the fine for the E. Jean Carroll defamation and sexual assault thing. Right? Seems like it's all fun and games until there's actually, you're in a courtroom, you can't get away with bluster and bravado and using your charisma to override any sort of criticisms of you. A courtroom is a place where facts matter. And he don't have that many facts on his side, if we're being honest. So, man, that's wild. Secret Service is like trying to figure out, look, if he were to have to spend time behind bars, I mean, my assumption is probably the same as what your assumption is, which is like, they'll find some prison that's like, basically like a hotel, right? He'll get a big screen TV. He'll have like a pool table or a ping pong table in there. He'll get be able to go outside. You know what I'm saying? Like it'll be like those prisons that all the financial criminals go to, the white collar criminals, who, by the way, end up stealing like hundreds of millions or billions of dollars from innocent people and actually probably commit worse crimes than somebody who's like sticking up a liquor store, right? But they usually get off kind of easy. My guess is that's what would happen with Trump. That's my guess. But I'm not 100% sure because these are state charges. This is not federal charges. And I think those like very minimum security, like nicer prisons are more of a federal thing than a state thing. So just the idea that they said, we'll put him in a holding cell in the courthouse. Imagine Trump in one of those. Oh my goodness. Good googly moogly. This is wild stuff, but there you have it. So clearly the Biden administration is a little concerned about the polls vis-a-vis Trump. To be fair, Biden has had a little bit of a surge lately, but the race is effectively dead tied, right? That's my breakdown as of now with my analysis of like all the polls, okay, all the recent polls. But what I'm about to show you is that we just got three colossal victories for working people and your average American. And it came one after the other after the other. So let's start with this here. This is from More Perfect Union. Breaking: the Department of Labor has raised the overtime threshold. The new rule says that everyone who makes under about $58,000 a year and works over 40 hours a week must be paid time and a half. So that number used to be about $35,000 a year. So it used to be if you make $35,000 or less and you work over 40 hours a week, they would have to pay you time and a half in that scenario. Now they upped it massively to about $58,000. Damn. So this is going to increase pay for about 4 million people. That's a big deal. That's a huge, huge deal. And look, again, to be fair, when you look at these sorts of like regulatory decisions and decisions from the various agencies under Democratic administrations, there's no doubt that under the Democratic administrations, they simply just do better things, right? The Republicans, if anything, the Republicans would try to find a way to like axe this rule completely. Like nobody gets time and a half, but the Democrats expanded it. So that is phenomenal, phenomenal work here. And it's going to raise pay for about 4 million people. All right. So then we also have this. This was a bit of a shocker, especially because Pete Buttigieg is the Secretary of Transportation. Breaking: airlines will now have to pay you when they mess up. The Department of Transportation has issued a new rule requiring airlines to give you an automatic refund if your flight is canceled or delayed or if they lose your bags. So, I mean, look, you read this and your immediate thought would be like, wait, that's not already the case? Like, that's insane that that wasn't already the case. But here we are. But honestly, I may have saved the best for last year. The FTC just banned non-compete agreements. The Federal Trade Commission has issued a final rule making it illegal for bosses to make workers sign non-competes in any scenario and voiding nearly all existing non-competes. This is a game changer for American workers. So let's play this. By the way, this is Lina Khan. We all know Lina Khan is the real deal, doing real work to help the American people. So let's watch this breakdown here for us. This is a huge deal, y'all.
Today, you've made a major announcement that helps millions of workers in America. Tell us what that is.
Today, the FTC has finalized a rule that will eliminate the vast majority of non-compete clauses in people's contracts. A non-compete clause is a provision that basically prevents people from taking a job with a competitor or starting a competing business, usually within a particular geographic area and for a certain period of time. So around 30 million American workers are covered by a non-compete.
The incredible number of non-compete clauses for ordinary people to keep wages low.
And so we're talking about fast food workers, security guards, nurses. We're talking about engineers, journalists, veterinarians. These are really people across sectors, across income levels.
So I could not work in my field for one full year within that radius.
And I hope nobody has to go through what I went through, because it was very, very emotional and very challenging.
We heard from workers who were working at a casino, got a better offer at a competing casino with higher wages, but because of the non-compete, they were locked in place. We heard stories from veterinarians who had to uproot themselves multiple times, switching states, all because a non-compete prevented them from being able to do business in the same state.
When you think of the workers and the impact on their wages and earnings in America, what do you anticipate is going to happen as a result of this non-compete ban?
Wages will go up. The average worker will make $529 more every year, which collectively means that tens of billions or hundreds of billions of dollars of wages will be going back to workers.
Help people understand why that is. So if there's hundreds of billions of dollars increasing in the economy, how did that happen?
That would happen because right now, workers are stuck in place because of these non-competes. And so even if they get a better job opportunity with higher wages, with better benefits, they can't actually switch jobs, which is bad for those workers. It's also bad for other workers who won't have the opportunities that are not being created because of these non-competes. So there's just less churn in the economy overall. There's less dynamism. And that means that wages are lower than they should be.
Corporate America, Chamber of Commerce, many of their allies want to fight this in the courtroom.
The Chamber of Commerce told us today that the FTC's rulemaking is unlawful, and they told me today it's already contemplating legal action against it.
What is our best understanding of why what you're doing today is legal and within your authority?
So the FTC Act that Congress passed clearly gives the FTC the authority to issue rules to carry out its obligations. The FTC Act also prohibits what are known as unfair methods of competition. The agency has determined that these non-competes are unfair methods of competition, and so we have the ability to issue a rule to outlaw them.
As chair of the Federal Trade Commission, one of your goals is obviously see more competition in America. It's fair to say that if workers were given more freedom of movement, that you might also see more businesses sprout up?
Absolutely. A lot of the comments that we got were from workers that actually wanted to go start their own competing business. We heard from people in the asphalt business that saw an opportunity in the market, wanted to go start a rival firm, but weren't able to do so because they were locked in with a non-compete.
And there's actually, correct me if I'm wrong, there's attorneys and bankers who make a decent income who are also affected by non-compete agreements, right?
That's right. I mean, we got comments from across the income level, people making near minimum wage, but also people making tens of thousands of dollars or even hundreds of thousands of dollars, sharing stories about how non-competes had been devastating for their lives. We heard from doctors in rural America who shared how non-competes really limit their ability to continue providing care for their patients if they ever look to change employers. So this is having real world effects, harming Americans and harming their communities.
As you were talking, I was thinking of corporate M&A attorneys and big bankers at firms who work on mergers. And I would just want to make a point to them that Lina Khan's got your back. So you'll have more freedom of movement as a result of this non-compete ban.
So guys, huge deal. 1 in 5 American workers are restricted by non-competes. But now the FTC has issued a ban that will cover hundreds of millions of workers. Non-competes are insane. The idea that when your relationship ends with an employer, that afterwards they can still exert influence and have veto power over what you want to do with your life and your time, that's absurd. By the way, the business that I'm in, political commentary, apparently there's a lot of non-competes in this world. Obviously not. I'm fully independent. I'm my own boss, right? So not for me, but for anybody who's done, had like an official pundit or commentator's job, a lot of those people get non-competes. So if somebody works for whatever, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, and then they get laid off at some point, there's usually a clause that says, sorry, you can't work in the media business, media industry for like 2 years or something like that, right? And they could even prevent you from starting your own thing after the fact. There's just one example. Now, look, it's much lower stakes when talking about the media, simply on the based on the fact that a lot of these people who get these paid gigs usually make a tremendous amount of money. So like they can absorb not working for a year or two, right? But in a lot of industries, as they laid out for you here, that's not the case. That's it. You need a stream of income. And if you can't get a job in the field that you know, within like your state or whatever, you got to move to a different fucking state in order to make a living. What are we doing here? This is just, okay, we've let the corporations run wild. They're totally fucking out of control. And what I fear is you're going to get the lawsuits. It's going to go to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court is going to side with the corporations. Because, you know, that's their idea of a good system, is one where the corporations have total control. You know, I think we've entered like a new Lochner era of the court. By the way, if you haven't read about the Lochner case, go read about the Lochner case. Go read about the Lochner era. So you'll know just how broken things were. It took like the New Deal era to like snap a saddle out of that stuff. But look, ever since Reagan, we've sort of rolled back into not a good place. We live in functionally a corporatocracy or an oligarchy, and big money controls everything. But now, this is just a rare instance where one government worker actually gives a shit about people and knows how to use the law to help the people. And look at the positive outcome. So I hope that they can weather all of these cases, because non-competes are frankly insane. They should have never existed in the first place. And it is awesome that they're gone. Let's just hope that they stay gone. Oh boy, I've seen this tweet 412 times. This went viral on my timeline. I could tell you guys that much. So Hillary Clinton came out the other day and she said, "What's at stake for our climate in this November's elections? Absolutely everything." And she tweets a chart here from carbonbrief.org that shows this. A Trump election win could add 4 billion tons to U.S. emissions by 2030. And it has these lines here. The target of where we should be with carbon emissions, you know, based on phasing out oil and gas and fossil fuels and following the Paris Climate Agreement. It's like, this is the target. This is where Biden gets us. And this is where Trump gets us. And you could see actually the range of where they get us. The top end of Biden's range and the bottom end of Trump's range are almost touching, almost tied. So Hillary tweets this as like a big, you know, advertisement for Joe Biden, an argument for Joe Biden. Don't be fucking stupid, you dumb liberals and lefties and Democrats. Get your shit together. Everything's riding on the line in this election. You got to go vote for Joe Biden. And then the chart that she pushes shows Biden's carbon emissions. It's much closer to Trump's than it is to the target. See, again, here's the target. I can't even tell you how many tweets I saw in response to this that said, who is target and where can I vote for him? That's my reaction too. Who is target and where can I vote for him? Let's call it what it is. This is the platonic ideal of what a Democrat is in today's day and age. This is the quintessential example of Democratic Party politics in today's day and age. Because the only legitimate argument they can make is, hey man, we're better than these psycho Republicans. And look, that's true. That's true. But by her own admission, you're still closer to the Republicans than you are to where we need to be. Again, your own admission, your own chart shows this. And unfortunately, on so many issues, this is what the chart would look like, right? I mean, just think about it in any context. Healthcare. You'd have a chart and it shows Trump's ideal is like totally repealing Obamacare, doing an even more massively pro laissez-faire free market healthcare and health insurance system. That's where he would be. Then you'd have Biden with like doing Obamacare, which is you're forced to go to private health insurance companies and pay them. And then you have like Medicare for All is the target and where you should be, right? And Biden and Trump are way closer. Now, look, it's true. Under Democrats, you'll have millions more people that have health care, but it'll also be too expensive. Medical bills will still be the number one cause of bankruptcy. All these things. And it's like, these are the choices they always give us. These are the choices. And again, you pick the issue. Look, I'll grant you that when it comes to particular social issues, it's actually not a close call at all. Because, you know, take guns, for example. The Republicans take a tremendous amount of money from the NRA, and they serve the NRA. The Democrats just don't do that. And so they have good positions on gun control. They want universal background checks. They want to ban high-capacity magazines. So, like, there are some areas where there is no comparison. Abortion's a good, gay marriage, things like that. I think it's fair to say the Democrats are just good and the Republicans are just bad, right? But on so many issues, it's like they're so close and then the target is like way somewhere else. And I don't know how to get through to these people that Democrats would win elections by like 15 points nationally if they just fucking did the shit that everybody knows they should do. If they just did universal health care, if they just did free college, if they just did the PRO Act and made it so more people are part of a union, if they just got the money out of politics and so, you know, they could stop playing this losing game where they're taking big bank money and Wall Street money and defense industry money, but they're always taking a little less than the Republicans because the Republicans are the darlings of industry. So they're Democrats are agreeing to play a losing game there. Yeah, like we'll get funded by giant multinational corporations, but we'll also get paid less because, you know, we want to raise taxes on them 3% and they don't like that. So they'd rather fund Republicans more. You could just get money out of politics. Right? Get back to a place where it's like publicly funded elections and then run on things that are actually popular. That's what you should do. But no, this is what we get from the likes of Hillary Clinton. This is what we get. Look at this chart. Trump is really, really bad. Biden's a little bit better, but he's still way off of the target and where we need to go. The fact that she couldn't stop and reevaluate this and realize this actually makes us look idiotic, I'll never understand. I'll never understand. It's just like, it's so obvious. It's right in front of you. But hey, I will give her that. It is the most honest argument you can make for somebody like Joe Biden. It is the most honest argument. Like, just let's run a campaign where just every word out of our mouth is, we're better than this psycho over here, right? Because that's one where I hear it and I go, yeah, that's true. You know, I got no beef with that. That's accurate, but it's also just kind of sad for what we should have. All right, y'all, it's that time again. It is time for a wife guy segment. It's been a while since we've done a wife guy segment, but we are going to remedy that and we're going to do it right now. So Crystal was invited on Piers Morgan Uncensored. And the topic was these pro-Palestine protests that are happening at Columbia and now NYU and elsewhere. And look, I could tell you from behind the scenes, of course, that, you know, when she was invited, of course, your initial thought is like, it's either going to be just me and Piers or it'll be me, Piers, and like one other person. Right. Because in that scenario, those numbers are manageable. That works. You can say what you want to say. You can have a substantive exchange. Like, those are the best kinds of conversations or debates or discussions where it's a reasonable number of people. We've all seen the CNN segments where there's like literally a dozen people at a giant desk. And it's like, what are we getting out of this? Each one of the people would talk for like a grand total of 17 seconds for the entire 2-hour show. And it's like, what are we doing here? Do they not think that like what? You think these people can't carry a conversation or a debate? Of course. I mean, this is what we do, right? Like for a living. That's what I do. I can fill the time, and Crystal can, and anybody else who does this can do that. But no, what they did is they jam packed this thing with like 1,000 people. By 1,000, I mean, there's four. There were four people plus peers. So 5 total. And man, this got super unhinged. So one of the people on this panel is a former IDF soldier. Another person on this panel is an absolute liar who is known for lying. Now, they didn't know this at the time during the segment, to be fair, but she made a big deal about, I was attacked at a pro-Palestine rally. Somebody poked me in the eye with a Palestinian flag. Turns out, total lie. She made it up. She just made it up. By the way, she also has a history of doing similar things. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And then you had Wajahat Ali and you had Crystal. So let's watch some of this here. We're not going to go through all of it because it's a very long video, but you'll get a good sense of how this went down.
The White House has condemned what it calls blatantly anti-Semitic statements at student protests against the war in Gaza. Fractious demonstrations at Columbia University in New York have rumbled on for 6 days, while arrests have been made at other major colleges, including Yale. Jewish students at Columbia have been warned to go home with classes moved online. Some pro-Palestine protesters have been suspended. Critics say this is a free speech issue, conflating criticism of Israel with hatred of Jews. Others say it's simply unacceptable that Jewish students do not feel safe. We're joining me now to discuss all this are the editor of the Yale Free Press.
The Jewish students who are actually unsafe are the ones who are leading groups like Jewish Voice for Peace. It's the pro-Palestine Jews. It's the anti-Zionist Jews who have a target on their back and are getting canceled and are getting censored. It's them. And the NYPD is coming to crack their skulls. The idea that it's Zionists who are unsafe. Get the fuck out of here. The entire administration at all these colleges is packed full of Zionists. Billionaire Zionist money is coming in and flooding these universities, and people like Robert Crafter say, I'll pull out my money because you're not, what, sending the National Guard in, shooting bazookas at the students? Like, what do you want? Anyway, I love how Piers is, like, very critical of Biden and skeptical of Biden, seemingly on everything, but then in his intro here, when talking about, the White House has called this blatantly anti-Semitic. You know, now would be a good time for a little bit of that criticism you got, or a little bit of that skepticism you got there, Piers. Because Joe Biden is fucking wrong about this.
Zahar Tatak, who was jabbed in the eye with a Palestinian flag by a protester, the Arab-Israeli journalist.
Okay, by the way, liar. She's the liar. Let me just, I'm going to show you again. Ready?
We're going to discuss all this. I'm the editor of the Yale Free Press.
This is the liar. Again, we'll prove that in just a minute. But she said she was poked in the eye on purpose by a Palestinian flag. Your eyes are in perfect shape. There's not even a hint of an injury there. You think maybe that would have like raised people's, hey, I don't know, what's going on here? It doesn't look right. No, people just ran with the narrative, of course, because the narrative is the one the media wants, so they ran with it.
Tatak, who was jabbed in the eye with a Palestinian flag by a protester, the Arab-Israeli journalist Youssef Haddad, who was assaulted at a protest at Columbia University, the host of...
No. It wasn't the student activist who punched him. It wasn't. And you'll see, he goes... Well, actually, I don't know if I have the video in this thing, so we can't go through all of it, but he's recording, he runs up, he's very loud, he's very aggressive, he's talking into his camera, and he's like kind of yelling at the other people, and then eventually one of them punches him, right? Now, still, to be fair, I'm against the violence, period. You shouldn't have punched him, even though he's the most annoying fucking man on the planet. But as you're about to see, he is the most annoying fucking man on the planet. He does not shut the fuck up the entire time.
Breaking Points, Crystal Ball, and hey, also, go back to where you come from, Wajahat Ali. Well, welcome to all of you. Let me start with you, if I may, Saha. Tell me exactly what happened to you.
Sure. So I went to a large anti-Semitic campus rally.
This is why I can't take these people seriously, right? This is why I can't take you seriously. Your description of the entire rally is, I went to the anti-Semitic rally. So what? That was like the point of the rally? Were they waving banners that said, I'm an anti-Semite? Like, you don't... Okay. In order to change minds, in order to win arguments, you have to spit facts. You have to be honest. Now, if you want to accurately portray what these protesters believe and then disagree in a genuine and sincere way, that's fine. That's fine. I got no problem with that at all. But what you're doing is you're poisoning the well. You come out and immediately say, anti-Semitic rally. Well, you have an established dick about that, so why should I take your word for it? Because we all know the real reason for these rallies. Hey, we want the university to divest from their, financial connections with Israel. Perfectly reasonable. And we want the genocide in Gaza to stop. perfectly reasonable. But yeah, anti-Semitic rally. Really? Were they praising Himmler at this rally? Were they waving Nazi flags at this? Fuck off.
A night to document the protest with another visibly Jewish friend. He wears a black hat and tzitzit, which are ritual fringes, and has a beard. And I dress in ritually modest clothing and wear a Star of David. And we were immediately identified by protest.
This is like, did you guys see this video that was floating around social media where some Zionist Jewish woman wears a shirt that says Jew on the front and has like the Israeli flag on the back, and the woman's husband posted it and said, look at how brave my wife is. And it was like there were a bunch of like pro-Palestine protesters around her, but they're totally minding their own business, and she just like walks out and stands in the middle as he records her. Nobody's paying any fucking attention to her at all, and she's standing there with a shirt that says Jew with a Israeli flag on the back, and the husband's like, so brave, my wife is so brave. What is with this extreme desire to be a victim? You are not a victim. You know who is a victim? All of these pro-Palestinian protesters who just had to have the NYPD come in and crack their skulls, who are basically rolling the dice with getting suspended or expelled, who are having the full force of the administration at these colleges crack down on them. Jewish Voice for Peace got banned at Columbia University. Why are they not victims? Because they're pro-Palestine. And you just say, if you're pro-Palestine, you're anti-Semitic. That's what this is.
And so they blockaded us by creating a human blockade, as in standing in a line with their arms linked in front of us. And eventually Netanel and I were separated, and so each of us were assigned separate human blockades made of protest organizers that taunted us and waved flashlights in our face. And as the other 500 anti-Semitic students at the...
Oh, look at Peter soaking this in. Oh, yeah, very serious. Oh, yes, very good. Very good. Oh, telling the truth, yes. Come on, man. No, your spidey senses aren't going off here. You know, you're not sensing a disturbance in the force here as she's talking. Oh, yeah, this is totally straight up.
Noticed us and identified us. They joined in on the taunting. And so I was encircled by 500 students.
I was encircled by 500 students. What is this, a fucking superhero movie?
Dancing against the Jewish people in a circle.
They were singing and dancing against the Jewish people in a circle? Who can believe this is an accurate portrayal of what went down? If you believe that, you have fucking oatmeal in your head.
Around this plaza at Yale, basically the central plaza on our campus. And as they taunted me and waved their middle finger in my face and waved their keffiyehs in my face, one of them took his Palestinian flag, waved it in my face, and then jabbed me in the left eye.
Why does your eye look perfectly fine? That's my first question. Why does your eye look perfectly fine? All right, well, this is the incident that she was referring to. Let's watch this. Here we go. That's it. That's the incident. I had it on double speed. Here, I'll slow it down for you guys. She's recording, okay? Does that look like a vicious assault to you? Again, let's play it again. She's recording. She's recording. Does anybody want to come out and issue some fucking corrections here? Does anybody want to come out and state the obvious? That this fucking woman is a fabulist and she's lying to get attention and build her narrative that they're all anti-Semitic students and they hate Jews and I'm a victim and 500 people encircled me and started singing songs about how Jewish people are evil. You are a liar. This woman is a liar. That's what she is. Now, by the way, I said we would prove it. I think this video is proof enough. But there's another interesting point to make. Do you guys remember? It was like, what, maybe a month into the genocide in Gaza. And somebody tweeted something very bizarre. Like, I'm noticing an uptick in anti-Semitism problems at the school. They changed the name of the Israeli couscous in the cafeteria. They dropped Israeli. Do you remember that? I remember that. I think we talked about it on the show. As like, look how fucking fragile and idiotic these people are. So first of all, let's just be clear. In a situation where the thing was named Israeli couscous and they dropped Israel from it. whoop-de-frickin'-do. It's like if they had something named Apartheid South Africa Oranges and they dropped apartheid out of everybody, I'd be like, okay, just call them oranges. That's fine by me, right? But that didn't even happen. That didn't even, it was a lie. It was a lie. It was a lie. It was a lie. She's the bitch that floated that out there. She's the Israeli couscous bitch. She is a known fabulist. And she's being taken seriously. But by the way, the media ran with her story. Oh, but pro-Palestinian or pro-Israeli woman poked in the eye. None of them are going to retract it. None of them are going to come out and say, the video doesn't look like what she said. And the video looked totally fucking benign. Totally benign. Worst case scenario you could say is the person kind of just tried to wave the thing in her face. That's all. But she's like, oh, my eye. Oh, I'm dead. She's a liar. She's a liar. By the way, she's also like a writer for Quillette, right-wing outlet. Like, what are we doing here? As I tell you guys all the time, on this particular issue, I see wall-to-wall dishonesty from the pro-Israel side. They know they're losing the argument on the merits. It's an ethnic cleansing. It's a genocide. 41,000 Palestinians have now been killed. 36,000 of them are civilians, 15,000 kids, 9,000 women, 2 million out of 2.3 million Gazans are homeless. They know all of that is fucking indefensible. So what do? Change the conversation. All the people who are protesting this actually are funded by Hamas and Hezbollah, and they love Hitler, and they were chanting anti-Semitic things and dancing very anti-Semitically, and I've been assaulted. Oh. Liar. Okay, Jesus Christ, I'm not done. So now let's jump ahead a little bit. I'm just going to give you a taste of what this guy right here, the former IDF guy, what he was like in this debate, because it is horrific, I guess is the best word to describe it. Here we go.
Supporting Hamas. There's a few people, isolated incidents. And yesterday, everyone should take solace in this, that yesterday, the students were organizing the protests in Colombia. Can you just let me finish, Ahmed? Yesterday, this will make you happy. Yesterday,
just answer the question.
He's not going to stop.
They're chanting. It's not one person or two person. It's the whole
the
student
ugly
shouting
anti-Semitic statements. Yesterday, just let me finish. Yesterday, when it all came out, these four or five videos that came out, guess who condemned them in full? The protesters. And then they said they're not part of the protest. They're outside the school. And then the Jews inside the protest movement are sending you videos saying that this does not represent us. So I, for one, think that we should put the focus on what are people saying.
Reality.
They are against ongoing collective punishment against Palestinians that has killed over 34,000 people thanks to direct and support and money from the United States. They want ceasefire. They want peace. And they went the end of an occupation. I would think everyone here who believes in justice and peace will be against an occupation and against a war that has been an utter failure for the past 7 months that has brought no security to Israelis or Palestinians. Why do you not join me in Crystal in saying an end to anti-Semitism, anti-Islamophobia, and for a ceasefire and the release of hostages? Do you agree that these protesters that include Jews are terrorists?
I absolutely agree with you that we need to release all the hostages.
Israel tweeted that.
And only,
do you agree
only
with Israel?
After you release all the hostages, we can talk about ceasefire, by the way. But
do you agree
nice
with Israel
that
these protesters are
peace.
Terrorists?
So he asked him, do you agree with Israel that these protesters are terrorists?
I really find it very, very amusing that you are saying that they are peaceful protesters while they're chanting Intifada, Intifada.
Do you agree?
that's their big trump card. These people aren't peaceful. They chanted Intifada. Yeah, that would fall under the realm of peaceful. That would definitely be peaceful. There's this stupid fucking gotcha that everybody's been trying to do lately on the idea of they're chanting from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. That's anti-Semitic. They're chanting Intifada. That is anti-Semitic. Hold on now. Have there been Intifadas that have been violent? Of course. But the word Intifada just means uprising. When you chant Intifada, 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 you can mean, number one, 2008 Great March of Return style thing, totally peaceful, totally nonviolent, Palestinians trying to get their human rights back. You can mean that. You could also mean Intifada, as in uprising, as in Palestinians have a right to defend themselves against an ongoing genocide and ethnic cleansing. Why does nobody ever utter those words? Palestinians have a right to defend themselves. Everybody says it about Israel all the fucking time. Nobody ever says it about Palestinians. Well, allow me to say it. Palestinians have a right to defend themselves. They are allowed to fight back against legitimate military targets. And if you want to call that an intifada, you want to call that an uprising, you want to call it whatever the fuck you want to call it, I'm down with that. I am totally fine with that, and everybody else should be too. But instead, what we get is a weaselly fucking dishonest argument of, oh, they chanted intifada, so they're definitionally violent. Notice he dodged the question when he was asked by Wajahat Ali, do you agree with the Israeli government when they called these peaceful pro-Palestine activists terrorists? He didn't answer that question. He didn't answer that question. I'm sure he agrees with the Wall Street Journal, who wrote that they're funded by Hamas and Hezbollah and the Houthis, because these people are nothing but fucking smear merchants. They want to talk about big money funding stuff in the United States, and you don't want to mention AIPAC and the Israel lobby? Fucking dishonest. All right. All right, but I'm not done. I'm not done. Now, we are going to go to Crystal's moments in the debate. Here we go.
I believe fundamentally in the right to free democratic protest. I mean, it's the bedrock of any free democratic country. But I don't believe in...
I believe in free democratic protest. It's the bedrock of the country. But... Oh, but, okay, let's keep going.
Violent hate rhetoric. And if you're a Jewish student at one of these colleges, hearing some of these chants, which we're all hearing, it's pretty terrifying.
Chants like from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, and Intifada. Those chants are not what they are smeared as being. Let's be clear about that. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free is a call for liberation. It's a call for one democratic state in the region. Ask the people who say it. They'll tell you that. Yes, when a Hamas member tells you that, what they mean is drive Israel into the sea. That's wrong. That's bad. College kids who chant from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. They mean one democratic, secular state for all. Everybody has equal rights. That's what they mean. Jesus Christ.
Isn't it?
Well, here's what I would say. First of all, I echo Wajahat in saying I'm glad that both of our two co-panelists are okay. And I certainly support the call for justice for Yosef. And I hope his assailant is, in fact, apprehended and accountability is meted out. I think it's disgusting and frankly a cheap trick to use some isolated incidents to smear an entire protest movement. And I think it's very clear what's going on here. You know, a majority of young people and a majority of college students, majority of Biden voters, believe that Israel is committing a genocide and that American taxpayer dollars are going to assist in that genocide. They're outraged by that and they're protesting. And by the
nonsense.
Way, they want
to
say, hold on, I listened to
everybody,
you, and I'm not finished.
Protects Jews and Arabs.
Yousef,
you are clearly lying
Yousef,
again and again.
You must let other...
She's lying. What lie? Where's there a lie? Right now, she's just explaining what the polling data shows. There's no fucking lie. Oh my God. This guy can't stop.
Protects Arabs and Jews.
Yousef,
am I
going to
be allowed to speak
finish.
Here? Am I going to be allowed to speak here?
Yes, you
okay,
are.
Okay, so a majority
of
young people...
Do not speak over our guest, please.
He can't stop.
That Israel is committing a genocide and they are protesting that. And by the way, they've won the argument. If you look at now, it's 60-40 against sending military aid to Israel. It's a majority that disapprove in America of Israel's action with regards to the Gaza Strip. So it's a cheap trick as old as time. Use a few isolated incidents to try to smear an entire movement, which has the benefit, number one, of attempting to delegitimize it, and number two, of distracting from the continued atrocities which are unfolding at the hands of the IDF in the Gaza Strip. So this is, listen, I condemn anti-Semitism. I certainly condemn violence. But let's be serious about who the villains are right now.
Would you agree that Hamas are villains?
The villains are the terrorist organization Hamas.
Hang on, I'm asking a question. Would you agree that Hamas are villains?
Terrorists.
Piers does this every time he talks about Israel and Palestine. He does this. And he thinks it's like the biggest gotcha in the world. It's like, hey, the IDF killed 36,000 innocent civilians. That's terrorism and that's messed up. But do you think Hamas is messed up? Yes. Next question. Like, what are we doing here, Piers? What are we doing? What does he think she's going to do? No, I am pro-Hamas. Of course she's not going to say... These people really don't understand how, like, basic moral principles work. They don't get it. Here, let me lay it out for you as simply as possible. I am against, in all instances, purposefully killing innocent civilians. That's it. We're done. I'm against that. I'm against it when Hamas does it. I'm against it when the IDF does it. And by the way, the IDF has killed more innocent civilians, both as a raw number and a percentage, compared to Hamas. So that's why it's hard to take all the fucking crying and moaning and bitching and melting down and the insistence on continuing to bring up Hamas. It's hard to take that seriously if these same people turn into Neo from the Matrix, trying to dodge accountability for Israel, purposefully killing even more civilians as a percentage and as a raw number. You know, people like Crystal and I have no problem saying, yeah, Hamas is a terrorist organization. They're evil. But then when you, is the IDF acting as a terrorist organization? Are they evil? All of a sudden. Pfft. Yeah, I don't, they don't even, bro.
they don't even mean the thing, bro. When they're trying to get Hamas, bro, they're defending them. Israel's right to defend themselves, bro.
all of a sudden, the mental gymnastics kicks in. Oh, Jesus.
And so is the Israeli government, given the number of civilians that they have intentionally targeted and killed, including targeting with a complete siege, which has triggered a famine. So first of all,
that's the most devastating point. And Crystal makes this point all the time. Anybody who tries to argue, Israel is only trying to get Hamas, bro. Okay. First of all, just a cursory look at the numbers proves to you that's not true. But also, they're doing an entire siege. No food, no fuel, no water, no electricity, etc. for millions of people. The day they announce that siege, they are making very clear collective punishment is our move. We think the innocent civilians are just as guilty as the terrorists, and we're going to treat them as such. So nobody could say, though, they're just targeting Hamas shit. From the day they announced the siege and onward, it was crystal clear they didn't just mean we're going after the 30,000 Hamas members. They meant we're going after the 2.3 million people in Gaza.
Fatah means uprising from the river to the sea. Somehow when it's, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu using that phraseology or holding up a map that literally shows Israel from the river to the sea with no Palestinians.
Somehow that's fine. Answer the right question.
Can you please, dude, just... for a second.
What do you mean Antifada means uprising? Have you seen Antifada, first Antifada? Have you seen the second Antifada? You don't know anything. You are not from the Middle East.
Guys, this is all they got. They're saying Antifada. What they mean is they want to kill all the Jews and be violent. When you have to strawman the other side, reevaluate your position, right? Is the claim really that some 20-year-old college kids with pink hair from fucking Burbank are pro Hamas? Is that really the claim? Do you really expect anybody to fucking believe that? Or is Occam's razor the obvious truth in this instance? Which is, these people, number one, want their universities to divest from Israel. And number two, want to stop the genocide. Stop the U.S. support, arming and funding it, and stop Israel from doing it. What do you think is likely? They're fucking proxies for Hezbollah and the Houthis, or they have a conscience and they can't stand to see another baby being carpet bombed and pulled out from underneath rubble with their legs missing. Gee, I wonder what it is. Crystal busted that fucking idiot up and he was massively triggered. And Pierre should learn a thing or two from this and not just look. There's nothing to gain in value. Number one, when there's so many people on the panel. But number two, if one of them is a fucking moron who won't shut the fuck up and let other people talk, what is there to gain from having them on? It's just a carnival. It's just a show. It's just a circus. He should just do two people at a time, have them have a real debate and discussion, as opposed to having little fucking lion virtue signalers like that bitch who lied about the Israeli couscous and being poked in the eye. She's a liar. And what's his face? The totally unhinged guy with the crazy eyes. That's it. That's the show. That's the show, y'all. I love y'all very much. Thank you for listening. You know the drill. Please like, please subscribe, please click that bell icon so you get a notification every time a video drops. Leave a comment. Thank you to everybody who supports the show on Patreon. Please consider supporting if you're not. I never have ever talked to an advertiser. I'm very proud of that fact, but you guys help fund this show from the ground up as a result. I'm leaving a lot of money on the table by not working with advertisers, but it's not really about the money. So if you guys can donate $2 a month, $5 a month, whatever it is, that helps out tremendously. And that's all I got for you guys. Dave Smith is on Crystal Kyle and Friends this week. Definitely check that out. We're going to talk about Gaza and his debate with Dennis Prager and Cenk Uygur and Batya Unger Sargon. That should be good. All right, guys. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Peace.